Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, somebody I'm looking forward to speaking with because it seems every day in my practice I'm talking about EMF and various things, mold and things that are affecting my patient's health that they have no idea about. It's like I'm opening a door that they never thought existed. And I wanted Ms. Kathy Cook to come back because she has a wealth of knowledge, and this is right up her alley, and it's what she does. And just to refresh everybody, Ms. Cook is a board-certified holistic nutritionist with the National Association of Nutritional Professionals. She uses a functional medical approach to help people identify imbalances in the body. She's also a certified building biology environmental consultant and certified electromagnetic radiation specialist with the Building Biology Institute. She assesses buildings for anything that may be causing health problems, including indoor air quality, mold, chemical off-gassing, ventilation, and EMF exposure. Combining holistic nutrition and building biology, she addresses both the body and the environment to help her clients achieve optimal health. She's also the founder of Idahoans for Safe Technology, an advocacy and awareness group for the safer use of modern-day communications. So, Ms. Cook, I want to thank you so much for joining me because I'm finding daily that it's coming into my practice, and for me to be able to be a complete physician, I have to know and be able to be facile with what's going on with my patients' homes. And it's been a really nice experience because people really don't know, and they're open now to becoming more advocates for their own health. And they want to fix the problem instead of just managing the symptoms. So what you do, you must deal with people like this constantly.
You're absolutely right, Dr. George. And I just want to say thanks for, you know, having me back and for helping to bring awareness about this topic, because like you mentioned, so many people don't know anything about this. And, you know, perhaps when they're seeing you, this is the first time they're hearing about, what do you mean? My environment can be making me sick. My house could be making me sick. And I unfortunately have these questions every day with clients that have tried everything and seen all the doctors and spent all their money only to find out it's a mold issue in their house, or it's EMF, or, you know, the multitude of other things that could be happening in our homes. So it's much more widespread than most people care to believe, as you alluded to.
Well, let's start off the conversation with, what's the history and origins of building biology? I mean, I'm a biology major, but I never thought or never even was exposed to this aspect of, I guess, this environmental medicine.
That's a really great question, and it's a fascinating answer. So building biology actually started in Germany after World War II. And what happened was, after the war, there, just like in the U.S., they promised their soldiers homes. You know, there was a lot of destruction and mayhem after the war, and they took the leftover chemicals from the war and put them into building materials. And this was the first time that that had happened. So before that, all of our buildings were natural materials: stone, brick, clay, wood, earthen materials, straw bale. You know, all of our buildings were strictly natural materials because that's all we had. And then suddenly after the war, we had all of this leftover chemical, which seemed like a great idea to put them into our building materials. And then what physicians in Germany saw over the several years after these houses were produced was that more and more of the occupants were getting sick. And so they got together and said, you know, what is going on here? Long story short, they traced it back to these chemically laden building materials, and we were looking at more increased efficiency at that time. So we started to build our homes tighter, which was the perfect storm of trapping these chemicals indoors, which then, you know, via inhalation was causing building sickness, sick building syndrome, and impacting the occupants. And so the field of building biology was born, And then it came over to the US in the 80s. And since then, we've added this other component of electromagnetic fields, because obviously about that time is when our dramatic increase in human-made electromagnetic fields began. So here we are today with sick building syndrome from both air quality issues, moisture issues, chemicals, and electromagnetic fields.
So I'm living in the South, and I'm curious to know, are there any parts of the country where you're seeing, for example, mold is a huge thing in Georgia, and I'm sure in Florida and everywhere else. But are you seeing that same type of exposure throughout the country, or is this really a more of a Southern issue?
It's all over the country. You know, I live in Idaho, and I'm in the southern part of Idaho. It's very dry here. The average humidity, well, there's really no average, depends on the season, but it's 30% outside, sometimes 20%, you know, 40% would be high. So the humidity here is very low. It's a very dry climate, but I'm in houses every day, and I would say 95% of the homes I'm in, I'm finding significant microbial issues. And it's not, you know, the humidity definitely increases the opportunity to have a serious mold event in your home. And, you know, in the humid environments in the South, like you mentioned, it's probably a higher incidence, but it has more to do with the way that we build and our lack of awareness about the things we're supposed to be paying attention to. You know, we run plumbing through our walls, which when you think about it is kind of crazy. You know, we're trying to outsmart nature and say, no, we can have water in the walls, but inherently we get drips, we get leaks, we get water penetration in our foundation, through our roofs. I mean, there's so many areas of building failure, windows, doors. It's just the way we live. So if you add humidity, you have a higher percentage of an opportunity for water damage, but it definitely happens in our drier climates too.
That's good to know. I actually had a conversation with a patient this afternoon about mold exposure. And I was asking her, are there any leaks, any history of leaks in your home? And she said something about the plumbing in the wall leading out from the house, that there was a leak from there. And, you know, it's a dumb question, but is that significant as this kind of a just one-off area? Could that affect something like that, the whole home?
Oh, sure. So I see that often. A hose bib is a good example of that. So we have, you know, you go out to your outside, you're going to wash your car, and you've got a hose, you know, faucet on the exterior of your wall. But none of us are thinking about the fact that where does that go? You know, that water has to come from somewhere. And it's usually a line, you know, a plumbing line running through your wall to that faucet. So if you've got a leak anywhere in that tube, it can get into the wall, and you might not know it, but if you've got, it could even be a tiny little slow drip, and it still has the propensity to grow mold. And what's happening usually in that situation is you've got this water in between two pieces of drywall, because it's in a wall, and that drywall has got paper on the outside. So the water wicks up the drywall, and then suddenly you've got a huge mold issue, because paper is pre-digested food for mold, and you can't see it, but it can get through the cracks in the walls, right? The outlets, the light switches, where the wall meets the floor, under the trim. I mean, there's all these pathways for that air to come out and for the microbial growth to penetrate your breathing area. And it definitely can cause some health issues. It doesn't always, but it definitely has the potential.
That's fascinating. So we're talking, when I think of mold, and I'm sure most people, it has a smell, it's a mildewy type of situation. But is that always the case? Is it ever something that, hey, it's odorless, colorless, it's just a gas, and you really are exposed, but you can't tell?
Absolutely. And that is, I'm really glad you asked that question, because it's very important for people to understand. When you smell that musty smell, that typically means there's a moisture or a water issue happening right now, and the microbial growth is active. So that musty smell is the chemicals given off by the mold growth, the colonies that are currently growing. But let's say we take away the moisture from that event. There's a plumbing leak and we fixed the plumbing leak and there's no more water. Well, let's say it's a month from now, a year from now, 5 years from now. That mold didn't pack its bags and leave. It's likely still in the wall, but it's now dry or dormant or non-viable, which means it's just kind of sitting there. It's not actively growing, but the mycotoxins are still there if it produced mycotoxins. So the mold is still there, which can be an irritant. And if it created mycotoxins in that situation, those mycotoxins didn't go away. So they still have the ability to cause health problems. And you're not smelling anything at all. You're not seeing anything or smelling anything because it's not active. So it's not currently releasing those gases and those chemicals that you can smell, but it still can definitely cause health problems.
So my corollary question to that is, you know, I would assume the person's living in the home, they're running the air conditioning, they're doing things that are actively kind of keeping the air quality or the environment not friendly to the mold. But let's say they go away and the humidity level rises in the house, for example. Will that activate that?
Possibly, yes. So if that dormant mold is there and now we've got a new water source, yes, it could reactivate it. However, you know, if it, let's say that that mold wasn't there, but the situation still remains where they left town for a couple of weeks, the humidity increased. You know, there's mold spores in our environment constantly, always, all the time. So we still could have a problem here because our humidity is going up. We've got mold spores in our home, and now we've given them an opportunity to colonize and to grow on our surfaces. So either way, you know, humidity is key. That's the, you know, one of the main things we need to maintain in our home to prevent some of these mold spores from having the moisture that it needs to flourish and to potentially release mycotoxins, which is going to cause some health problems.
So I have another corollary question then. With all of the people, folks working from home and being on their computer and running their Wi-Fi and upgrading it to 5G and all these other things, how, and if it does, how does that dovetail with this, these latent mold spores or the mycotoxins? Does it activate them? Does it work in tandem with them to make them more toxic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is a little bit of research showing that EMF can exacerbate the mold. It, you know, makes it more aggressive, more irritated, so that it actually will release more mycotoxins. So the interesting thing about mold is, if you have mold growth, it doesn't always mean that it's going to produce these mycotoxins. It does that when it feels threatened. So, for example, there's multiple different species of mold in this area, and they're all competing for territory. They may release mycotoxins in that environment to, you know, kill off the other molds. Or say when it's dried out, when it's drying out and it feels like, oh, I'm threatened, okay, let's release its mycotoxins. Or you put an antifungal on it, which is a whole nother topic, but very important to note. I never, ever recommend an antifungal on mold because we don't want to kill it, because that's when it's going to release more mycotoxins. We just need to get rid of it, physically remove it. So there's a theory that the electromagnetic fields threatens the mold as well. So when we've got mold in our home and we've got a high electromagnetic field environment, we can threaten the mold, in which case it becomes more virulent because it's threatened and it releases more mycotoxins. So that's, you know, a double whammy for sure. And I will say that most of the most sensitive EMF people that I work with tend to have had a serious mold exposure at one point. So there's also the flip side of, you know, my body is so worn down from this mold exposure, or my bucket is so full that now I'm going to add an EMF exposure. And it's like, I can't even, you know, I'm at my wit's end. My bucket is way too full with all of these toxins, and one just kind of builds on the other and really depletes the body.
That's really, I mean, it's so, everything is connected from what you described. And the one insult, and I've seen this, I've heard of this in history of patients where they've had mold exposure, they moved, and now all of a sudden, anything allergic, they just go off the chart, response to, whether it's a food allergy, whether it's an environmental, it's just not a typical response. It's like a rebound, slingshot response. And their inflammatory findings on physical exam are just, I think, more than you would expect from an average patient. So, I mean, to me, and we're going to take our first break, but I would be curious to know, because you have the perfect education, because you're also a nutritionist. So my question from the medical side is, are there foods that people need to stay away from? So let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook, and you can go to her website, wholehomeandbodyhealth.com. And before the break, so many things that we hit upon, and what we put in our mouths actually means a lot. I mean, as an ENT, we get to treat allergy and asthma and all sorts of things that are food related in terms of triggering inflammation. How does food become a help or a hindrance if somebody has an environment that set them off from the mold standpoint?
Yeah, such a great and complex question. You're talking about somebody becoming hyper responsive to foods after a medical struggle, and I see that often. And you know, it's really kind of a fascinating thing that the body is doing its best to protect itself, and it's saying, wait a second, you had this thing and it caused you problems, and now you're introducing me to all these new things, and I'm just going to put up the red flags everywhere because I really want to protect you. So in one way, I really appreciate that the body is doing its best to keep us safe. But when an exposure is very dramatic, let's say a mold exposure, it tends to get stuck in this fight or flight response, right? And it overreacts, it hyper responds to where it's not really helping us. It's just, it's fight or flight response is just off the charts. And in that situation, what I find is there really needs to be some nervous system work and some, possibly neural retraining. So there's some really excellent systems out there, DNRS, the Gupta program, Primal Trust, these are all nervous system brain retraining programs, which I think can do wonders for people to help tamper down that hyper response. But when it comes to food in general, as we're going through the healing process, we could look at this in many different ways. So you're talking about taking some inflammation markers and you're seeing just really high inflammation in some of these clients. And in that situation, it might be a great opportunity to go on an AIP, autoimmune paleo type of system, where we remove the majority of foods that could cause a reaction in people. And that will help us to really tamper down that hyper response to the food that we're eating. We could also go the route of, all right, if it's really a mold issue you're dealing with and your body is heavily burdened with mycotoxins and molds or has a candida issue, let's go on a low mold diet. Let's remove some of the moldy foods, which would be grains, corn and wheat are big ones, root vegetables, which grow in the damp earth, which are notoriously moldy. Fermented foods, unfortunately, we love fermented foods, but in a situation where you've got a mold exposure or candida, we need to remove those for a short term until your body can heal and bring its fungal ecology to a more balanced state. And then we can also look at the healing foods, things like pasture-raised meats. I'm a big fan of animal-based products in certain circumstances, especially for recovery. If somebody is dealing with these really chronic issues, you got to have the amino acids, the CoQ10, the omega-3s, certain minerals and vitamin A, things that we're only going to find in animal foods, but it's the quality that really matters. So you're not just going to go to the store and get a pound of ground beef. I want people to look for really well, you know, raised, 100% grass-fed, pasture-based meats, free-range eggs where the yolks are just full of choline and omega-3s. So, you know, food, it can definitely be our poison or our, you know, savior, as you mentioned, but we got to know, you know, which foods to choose based on where we're at in our healing journey. And that can get a little complex. And, you know, I may have thrown a lot out there with different scenarios, but working with a qualified practitioner like yourself to help identify, all right, where am I today and what foods are going to best suit me for today is really what you want to focus on.
Got you. And so just to pull back a little bit to the macro picture a bit, what are some of the symptoms? Because it's so, I mean, I found that they're anything that you wouldn't expect, neurological things. I'll give you an example. I had a patient who had mold toxicity, and it looked like she had Parkinson's when I saw her. She couldn't speak. She was stuttering. She couldn't walk. She was on a cane. It was just that dramatic, almost like she had just been devastated. We ended up, you know, she had to move. She had to get rid of all her clothing, her furniture, and be detoxed, essentially, right? Go on a diet and just let the body recover. But what other, are there more subtle signs? Because I think people may have things that they think are associated with something else. They don't even think that it could be environmental and mold-based.
Yeah, that's a severe situation, like you mentioned, with your client. And I have had some of those clients too. And that's, you know, it's really unfortunate and heartbreaking when somebody gets to that level, but it happens. Some of the more subtle signs that some of us maybe aren't identifying with, you know, a lot of people really aren't in tune with their body and aren't really aware of some of these more subtle signs. A chronic sinus infection, post-nasal drip, you know, somebody that's clearing their throat constantly or every morning, they, you know, they just can't quite get their throat very clear. We've got this post-nasal drip. So we've got this, you know, glymph drainage that's trying to drain at night when our brain is healing and it gets congested. For some people, it can be constipation or the opposite. You know, maybe you don't have chronic diarrhea, but your stools are a little bit looser than they should be. And you're going, you know, several times a day and it's not well-formed stools. GI issues. I see GI issues very often with the mold exposure. And, you know, that's one of the last things that anyone's thinking. You know, they're thinking, all right, what am I eating that's causing this? Do I have SIBO? Do I have IBS? Maybe I just need to cut out the coffee. Oh, it's dairy. It's gluten. You know, we rarely are thinking about mold in those circumstances, but it could present as only GI issues. A big one that I see a lot are skin issues, things like eczema. Eczema to me is a classic example of an environmental piece. You know, it could definitely be food related, but if somebody's got rashes that won't go away or lesions or sores on their skin, I'm going to think about environment and I'm going to think about mold. Other just really small things, like you wake up with crusty eyes, you know, you wake up and you have to like clear your eyes because you've got drainage around them or you're constantly congested. You know, I threw a lot of symptoms out there, but there is no system of the body that mold doesn't affect. So it could be so varied, even hormonal issues. I mean, any organ, any system of the body, mold can impact. So even some of these small signs, I really would like people to pay attention to.
Yeah, those are really subtle. I mean, you start talking about constipation and diarrhea, people are automatically, it seems, given a diagnosis of IBS or chronic constipation and they're on a medicine to totally, you know, ignore what might be the cause. It's always about treating the symptom. And if, like you said, it's really a lot of GI related issues, is there a connection between things like anxiety and depression, knowing that the neurotransmitters, a lot of them are in the gut?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't mention mood issues, but that's huge. I see that often. And in fact, a rather startling symptom that I see mostly for parents is when a child has rage. It doesn't have to be a child, but sometimes a perfectly, you know, well-balanced child that all of a sudden starts to have severe rage issues and anger, you know, out of nowhere. Like, what is this about? I've seen mold do that. And of course, that can happen with adults too. Anxiety, depression, absolutely, because just what you said, our neurotransmitters are made in the gut. And if we're not making enough neurotransmitters, our brain is going to suffer. Our memory, our mood, anxiety, depression, 100%. And, you know, add the EMF exposure to that. And that, to me, is where those mood issues really flourish. You know, mold can do it. EMF can definitely cause irritability, anxiety, depression as well. But you combine those two, and it's no wonder to me that we have the highest incidence of anxiety and depression in this country that we've ever seen before.
It just seems that we're missing the golden opportunity to change building, how we build things, I would assume, how we, as physicians and practitioners, start to look at that as a major underpinning. If you were to fix that, I can imagine how the decrease in all these medications to mask these symptoms, that would be a thing of the past. It would be awesome, because I think we would have a much healthier society on less medication. And that's what we, as physicians and practitioners, I think that's what we all want, is to have a healthy population, not just keep treating with more medicines and the people are getting sicker. Something is going on. So before we take our break, I do have a question, our second break. What are the materials then? You said before we use brick, we use things that could ventilate. What are we using now that's making us so airtight and closing us in with all these chemicals?
Yeah, well, you know, we're using a lot of manufactured products that are not solid structures. So, you know, drywall that's got paper on it. We're using particle board. We're using oriented strand board. We're using vinyl siding. You know, we're wrapping our house in plastic for energy efficiency. All of these chemically laden, petroleum-based, and, you know, kind of manufactured materials that readily absorb water, that provide a food source for microbial growth, that trap moisture. Spray foam is another one. You know, a styrofoam sometimes in crawl spaces or insulation, you know, these artificial materials that both trap moisture and are food sources for microbial growth. And so, just like you said, our houses aren't breathing. Moisture is trapped and we're getting chemical release from those. So we're getting kind of, you know, a lot of negatives from these artificial chemically based building materials.
Wow. And so for somebody who's in the, you know, fortunate position to be able to build their own home from the ground up, I would think that they should consult with somebody like yourself who can start the process on the good foot. And saying, "Hey, I wouldn't use this as a material. These are the things that will make your environment healthy." That's one of the jobs of a building biologist, is it not?
It is. It absolutely. And that's one of my favorite things to work on with people, because there's so much opportunity to get it right. And, you know, from the adhesives that you use to the insulation, to the roof material, to the siding material, to the paints and coatings, I mean, every single one of these choices, we have an opportunity to make our buildings so much healthier. And I love consulting on new builds, because thankfully today there's so much more product available than it was, you know, 10, even 15 years ago, to make those healthy choices. And I just love the idea of building this beautiful home sanctuary that's super healthy and is going to be really healthy for the occupants for years.
I think that's wonderful. On that note, let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And before the break, you were talking to us about how people can build from the ground up. But for those of us who have homes already, maybe we're going to do some renovation, etc. there's still going to be a place for a building biologist in that instance too, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, most of us are not building, you know, brand new homes. Most of us are living in existing homes already. And there's absolutely a lot of opportunity to improve your home, whether you're renovating or not. If even if you are doing a remodel, all right, let's look at, you know, the flooring choices. Can we omit carpet? That would be huge. You know, I mean, all of us that have carpets in our homes, most of us do, just doing that one thing alone, replacing that with polished concrete or cork or bamboo or hardwood, even luxury vinyl is a better choice. That's a huge improvement. Choosing, you know, non-toxic coatings, looking at the specific types of appliances that we buy. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do in our existing homes. Even just cracking windows is going to be a huge improvement because most people don't do it. We should have some air exchanges, several air exchanges inside our home every single day. And, you know, just designing for, all right, let's have, you know, some cross ventilation in this room. If we're going to open up this room, let's put an exhaust fan in here, which most rooms don't have, but we should, or an energy recovery ventilator, which brings fresh air in from the outside and filters it. So absolutely so much we can do in our existing homes.
So this begs the question then, all of these things that we buy that are supposedly energy efficient and, you know, they're given top efficiency numbers, like you should buy them because they're great. Is that really true? Are we getting things that are getting us sick, like the smart appliances and all these energy efficient, top notch, you know, refrigerators and stoves, et cetera? Are they worth it? Are they messing with us?
That's such a difficult question because, you know, I'm all for energy efficiency and, you know, appliances that are going to perform better, but you're correct in that they aren't without their issues. So this isn't true for every single energy efficient appliance out there, but generally speaking, we've got two issues. We can both have a water quality and an EMF issue. So many of our energy efficient appliances use what we call variable frequency drives or variable speeds. And what that means is it's changing the power quality. And energy efficient furnaces, for example, you can get a lot of dirty electricity from those. So that will alter the quality of the power coming from the unit. And that energy can radiate out into your living space 6 to 8 feet. So for somebody that's worried about their electromagnetic climate, the energy efficiency appliances aren't always a great option. And then, you know, we do need to talk about the air quality piece too. You know, if we've got a furnace, again, we'll stick with the furnace example, that is constantly, you know, putting out the exact moisture, or we put a humidifier on the furnace because we love that to, you know, keep the humidity a little bit elevated in a dry climate. We're going to add moisture there, and we are potentially creating an environment for microbial growth, including bacteria or mold. And, you know, when we're wrapping our houses so tight for this energy efficiency and then putting in this really high-end furnace, what are we doing? We're not bringing in external air. We're trying to manage this all mechanically inside without nature helping us out. That doesn't work. We need to have fresh air from the outside coming in. So it's really, you know, kind of a multifaceted answer to the question. But yeah, energy efficient appliances, we really need to take a second look at how they're impacting our environment and really do our homework to identify what's going to be the best approach for my specific climate. That's really what it comes down to. So there's no one great furnace. We got to think about what's going on in my climate. What's the size of my house? What are my needs? How many people live here? What are my behaviors inside the house? And then we can, you know, very strategically develop a plan for the best appliance approach and furnace approach in that situation.
So from the standpoint of the smart appliances where things are Wi-Fi. I mean, everything. I mean, people have these Alexas, they've got these Ring doorbells and their cameras in the home and all these things. It never goes off. Is it safe, right? Does it contribute to EMF in the house? I mean, you always think about your cell phone, but that's the least of it now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think it does, because it's, like you mentioned, it's emitting 24/7. So we have a Ring doorbell, we have a smart meter, we have a smart refrigerator. You know, one of the things that I've measured frequently that have been extremely high are ovens. I've measured 3 ovens in the past couple of weeks that were all, I mean, higher than most other appliances, which I'm not really sure why. I don't know what's going on there, but so very high. And it's penetrating most of the home all the time. And how often do you use the oven? Maybe an hour a day, you know? So why do we need this very high radio frequency impacting us the other 23 hours of the day? It makes no sense. So I don't personally think there's a place for it. I don't need to turn my oven on when I'm, you know, across town from my phone. I can go home and turn it on with the push of a button like I've done for, you know, 40 years. Like, it just doesn't seem like there's much reason for that at all, especially when it's going to impact us 24 hours a day. So I don't see a need for it. But the real realistic answer to that is all manufacturers are putting them in pretty much any device they can, because the ultimate goal here is that it can send information back to the company about your habits. What are you cooking? How often are you cooking? What's in your refrigerator? What is your energy usage, you know, pattern look like? Because that's important data, which can be sold and made a profit so that they can come back and market to you. So, you know, it's this web of the manufacturers putting them in any appliance possible because it's financially a good move for them. And so we just got to, as consumers, we need to demand stupid appliances, right? Sure. Appliances that don't have this smart technology.
I mean, it worked for our parents, for our grandparents. Why does it work for us at this point? I mean, are we just a kind of hostage to this? Well, some of us choose to be, to this. If it's why, you know, if it's the newfangled, then you need to have it run on Wi-Fi with AI and all these other things that are trying to make our lives easier. But when you look at it from a health perspective, I don't think that's happening. I mean, you just described whole organ systems that are affected by EMF and Wi-Fi and mold, etc. We have to think about it a different way. It's not about convenience, it's about the long view, don't you think?
Exactly. That's you're exactly right. I mean, it might be neat today. It might be really cool to go, oh my gosh, my refrigerator, you know, I can look inside my refrigerator when I'm at the store to see if I have eggs. I mean, that novelty is pretty cool. You know, the technology is impressive. I mean, there are things that you can do with this technology that is no doubt a major feat of engineering and brilliant engineers, you know, coming up with this technology. But is it necessary? I absolutely, of course, would say no. And, you know, I always say the further we get from nature, the more we suffer. And so with the advent of more and more of this technology, the more reliant we are on technology. You know, there was a situation that happened about a year ago in an apartment building. I can't remember what part of the country it was, somewhere in the Midwest, where it was a new apartment building and everything was smart. The locks were smart, the doors, everything. And there was a power outage and people could not get in or out of their house, of their apartments. And, you know, that's an extreme example, but that's how I feel, you know, that's the trajectory that we're going. We're becoming reliant on this technology to use the simple things in our lives. And how is that going to end up for us? I just don't see it ending on a positive note. I mean, we need to get back to the basics. We need to get back to nature and get back to the very basics to have some kind of normalcy and to get away from reliance on something that's outside of our control.
And that takes over for us doing basic things, you know, like thinking. I mean, people don't even know how to fix a I don't know if this is true, but there was some article about how millennials didn't know how to change a light bulb because that's not something that they had a facility with, or how to fix a plug, you know, so you can fix the wiring so it works. I mean, these are things that you really, this is like common knowledge back in the day. I don't think that's the case anymore. And so if you depend on all of these things to handle your life, like, come on, you can't make a list to go to the store. I mean, things like that. I mean, what's the point of living if you do nothing and you just sit back and let something think and do for you? I just don't find that to be living, you know? It's going through the motions, really.
Absolutely. And as a nutritionist, that really rings true for me when I think about the fact that people don't know where their food comes from. So they go to the store, the food comes from the store. Well, let's think about, where did it grow? You know, how did it grow? Did you put, you know, who was the farmer? You know, it started from a seed, you put it in the earth. Like, many people don't have any concept of that. They think a carrot comes from the store, and there's no understanding of the life cycle. There's no understanding of your connection with nature. You know, we used to cook over a fire, and we would be outside, and we would have stones, and we would have trees, and we would need to make a fire, and we would be outside, and we would see the sun come up, and the sun go down, and the moon come up, and the moon go down. And we knew where we belonged in the whole circle of life. And, you know, even on a daily scale, our circadian rhythm, you know, where we are during the day, the temperature, all of these cues, the light, the hues of the light, you know, all of these cues that tell us where we are in time and space and where we are in the earth. And we've completely lost that in the more of this technology that does these things for us, like you're saying, the less we have any understanding of where we belong in the natural world.
I think that was beautifully said. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And once again, how can people find your website and find out more about your services? Because what you do is really important. And I think anybody who is health conscious, whether that's from a nutritional standpoint, from their home, their work environment, you have to be on your P's and Q's. So how can people reach you and use your services?
Yeah, so my website is Whole Home and Body Health. So I've got a lot of information there. I've got a free guide, a top 10 ways to reduce your EMF guide that people can download for free. I've got a blog there where I've got some EMF articles as well as air quality articles, which is, you know, all free and I like people to take advantage of. I've also got a YouTube channel where I'm going around giving tips of this is how you measure this for EMF. This is the, you know, radio frequency coming off of this device. So that's can be really helpful too, as a resource for people to begin to understand what might be in their house that's causing health problems, what to look for when it comes for, you know, comes to mold and moisture. So those are all free resources that where people can find me. And yeah, you know, my phone number, my email is right on my website. If anybody has questions, wants to reach out. I love connecting with people and helping people start on this path. You know, I know it can be really overwhelming for people when, you know, especially all the things we just mentioned. It's like, okay, somebody who's new to this is like, wait, I have to do what? I have to do all of these things to my house. And that's not our goal. It's let's start simple. Let's tackle the things we can. And it's a process. So you make small steps. And then over time, you realize, oh, wow, I've made a huge improvement to my house. So we like to do, you know, the lowest hanging fruit. We like to tackle that and then try to achieve a few things every couple weeks, every couple months until suddenly we've made a huge dent into the health of our home and improved the health for everybody in the family.
I can speak to that myself. I mean, the first thing I did was get a timer for my router so that it went off overnight and then came back on the next morning. And the first night that it happened, the whole house got quiet. It was very dramatic. I had no idea. They had this background hum and I slept better than I'd ever slept, you know, as barring being a child, but it was amazing. So from that, I just kept doing one little thing, and it's become really a lifestyle for me now. And I want to share that with my patients. And you mentioned dirty electricity a while back, and I got one of these filters. Well, I got a lot of them actually for the outlets. And from what I understand it pretty much gets rid of or lowers the dirty electricity. And if for those that don't understand, what is that exactly?
Yeah. So, dirty electricity, it can go by many names. In the engineering world, you may say noise or hash or electromagnetic interference. Basically, what it is an altered sine wave. So in the U.S. here, the electricity comes into our house at 60 hertz, which means it goes up and down 60 cycles a second, and it would look like this nice, clean wave, just this wave going up and down if we had nothing plugged in. However, we plug a bunch of stuff in and we get our electricity from the grid, which has all of these, energy saving appliances on it, like we mentioned earlier. And that changes the quality of the sine wave. So it puts, quote unquote, noise or hash on the wire. And that manifests as these harmonics or distortions, these altered frequencies that penetrates out into your living space. So it's basically like a noisy, poor quality electrical line. And then our bodies can pick that up. We can't see it, but it definitely impacts us. And I will say, as somebody who's mildly sensitive, I notice the dirty electricity probably more than anything else. So if I'm sitting around a noisy source, let's say I'm working on my laptop with my hands on it, which I never typically do. I have an external keyboard plugged into the laptop so that I don't have to have my hands on it, because laptops are invariably a source of dirty electricity. I will feel it. I will get irritable, I will get cranky, and I will have a horrible night's sleep. So it's subtle, and a lot of people aren't making the connection. But it is definitely something that penetrates our homes and people will react to. So that's really great that you've got filters. That can help. It all depends on the situation and how much filtering and where you're going to put the filters and all those great things. But it's a great step.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong, but after I set my house up, my electrical bill went down by a lot. Is that something that I should have expected, or that was just... I got lucky.
No, you can. Yeah. I mean, it depends on a lot of factors. Sometimes another thing that you may have done is started to unplug things. With this awareness, with our awareness about our electromagnetic environment, our habits often change, even if we don't really notice it. Oh, I'm going to turn that light off that was, some people like to have all the lights on in their house all the time. And suddenly we have this awareness of, oh, I'm going to use less energy. I'm going to start to unplug things. But filtering it, you're cleaning up the power. So yeah, that's a great benefit of cleaning up your environment. That's really interesting that happened. That's great.
I know. I was really happy. It's like $100 less. I'm like,
oh my gosh, that's a lot.
I know, right? I must have been having some serious dirty electricity coming out of my sockets. So my next question is, for those of us, and all of us are on cell phones and iPads and laptops and such, do you recommend that people just wire everything if they can?
I absolutely do. 100%. And, a lot of people in this space, they kind of will say, well, let's think about, just turning it off at night or shutting down a little earlier. And those are all great. I'm proponents of those. But ultimately, the biggest influence, the biggest exposure that most of us have is our router, hands down. I mean, our phone is another thing. But if we did just that one thing, which is hardwire their internet, you're going to reduce your exposure by up to 90% in my experience, easily. And there's no reason not to do it. I mean, okay, yeah, I understand some people feel like that wire is a little inconvenient, but that's what we did for the first 20 years of the internet. Nobody complained because we didn't have another option. I'm completely 100% hardwired in my home. I don't even have an option to turn Wi-Fi on, and I'm not missing out on anything. you know, what I benefit from is I have greater sleep, less anxiety, less irritability. My circadian rhythm is in check. You know, I have an absence of all of these symptoms, but I'm still fully connected. In fact, I'm talking to you right now on my wired connection. And I will also say that it's much more reliable. It's much quicker. It's much more secure and safe. So for me, it's just a win-win all over the place.
I totally agree with you. I was shocked how fast it was compared to the wireless when I switched over. So that's something that people need to keep in mind. They think it's not convenient, but it actually is. Mm-hmm. And there's one thing that people may not know about is that their router, at least for us, in I think we have Comcast, right? The router has a way for it to connect outside the home. So you become a hotspot. And that was the first thing I turned off before I got the wired everything and also had it on a timer. I turned that feature off. So you're basically providing Wi-Fi for the company, but you're constantly getting blasted with people coming by, right? So that's something that people, it's subtle, but it's really key, a point to understand, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it makes me think when you talk about, you know, that hotspot, it makes me think of some neighborhoods now have neighborhood Wi-Fi. And it's like, man, where does it stop? You know, it's just not necessary. Or they have Wi-Fi in the park, or, you know, these areas where there's community Wi-Fi. And I understand for some people, that's a benefit. But for the large majority of us, it's in our houses, and we have control over that. So let's just take a second to control what's closest to us, because that's our biggest exposure, and the things that we can control. Because especially, it's, you know, we talked about for sleeping. If you can sleep, which is the most important 8 hours of your life every day, where you're going to heal and your body's going to repair, hopefully, let's make those 8 hours the most pristine, because that's going to give us the biggest impact here on our health. And if we could just control that, where we're sleeping, and, you know, not advertise and give away free things to our internet company via our Wi-Fi, you know, our hotspot. Let's manage that and what we can control in our own houses.
Agreed. Now, I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I wanted to touch base and talk about the Complete Home and Body Wellness program that you've created. Tell us a little bit about that, because that sounds like something that people should take advantage of, because it helps, you know, guide them, and you're working with them, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So this is a package that I put together for people that are remote, that they're not here in the Idaho or Rocky Mountain areas where I do most of my home inspections. So I guide people through over the course of several months in this course. And we not only look at your environment, but, you know, we're going to look at your health parameters too. So each couple of weeks, we dive into a specific area. So we cover your diet, and, you know, blood sugar balance is huge for me. So we usually start there. Let's dial in your diet, find out what the best diet is for you, get your blood sugar dialed in. And then we get into circadian rhythm, a hugely overlooked factor that people are ignoring, which is critical for our overall health from pretty much every angle. And then we get into the environment. All right, let's look at your air quality today. When was the last time you had your ducts cleaned? You know, let's look at your humidity. Let's get you a hygrometer. Measure your humidity over the course of a couple weeks. And we're going to discuss that and see what's going on. I'm going to give them some tips on how to look for microbial growth and water staining. So we're going to do like a virtual assessment. That way, you know, if they're really daring, they can get into the crawl space and attic, which is awesome. And then we're going to get into the EMFs, and I'm going to have them get a couple of meters, and we're going to start to measure what's going on in their environment and help. I'm going to help them reduce their EMF exposure over the course of the program. And then we're going to get into some of the specifics about some of the health issues that may be unique or individual to the person, and get a little bit more in depth that way. So it's really comprehensive. You know, it goes very deep into the individual's health challenges, and then just, for me, all aspects of creating a healthy environment, both in your body and in your home.
It sounds awesome. And it sounds like something that it's well, first of all, it's well thought out. So it's not just buy this and then it'll be okay. I mean, this is something, it's a lifestyle change. And from what you just described, the person is a partner in their care. So it's not just you telling them, it's them learning, being able to put it into practice and have an overhaul so they can fix the problem instead of I'm good until I stop doing what I want, you know, what you ask me to do, and then it's back. I'm a big proponent of teach the patient or teach the client so they can actually take it from there, right? You give them the building blocks. And I would assume you have a very motivated population who've accessed your services.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, I mean, I agree with you. Part of what I really like about this program, even though, you know, I don't always have the ability to come into your home, is that just what you said, we're empowering you to learn how to do this yourself. So you don't have to keep calling us in. You know, you're going to walk away with the tools to know how to do this so that you gain this awareness for the rest of your life. I mean, you're going to live in maybe many more houses in your life, and let's learn how to identify what's going on, and you get to be in control and have the power, which I think is, I just love that piece of it. And yes, you're right. My clients are motivated. You know, they usually get to me after years of health struggles, and they begrudgingly came to, you know, to understand the environmental piece or, you know, get away from the conventional medical system or the conventional products or cleaning products or, you know, body care products and all of these. So they've gotten here and they are motivated because they want to feel better because we want to have a good quality of life. So that I'm grateful for that as well, that people are motivated.
I love that. So in the minute or so that we have left, again, how can people find your website, access your blog, and get in touch with you?
Yeah, so just go to wholehomeandbodyhealth.com. That is the website. I've got links there to my social media. I've got an Instagram, a Facebook group, which is Environmental Illness and Sensitivities Facebook group, which anybody is welcome to come and join and ask questions. And then my phone number and my website are listed right there. My phone number and my email are listed right there on my website, so you can contact me that way as well.
Ms. Cook, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It was a wealth of information and now a call to action so people can help themselves take their health and their power back. I want to congratulate you for everything you do. You're just a blessing.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.